Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from The James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames. Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from The James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
This podcast was recorded Thursday, December 18th at 10:35 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like we'll all resolve in the new year not to speak ill of the dead, at least in the immediate aftermath of their demise. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who are quick to condemn the shameful words uttered by political opponents, but very reluctant to do the same when the words come from political allies. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, Defiance College lives up to its name. But first, we have a new snapshot of the mood of the Ohio voter. It is very early. We have 11 months before the November 2026 election. We have not even reached the filing deadline for candidates. That comes in February. But a new poll out by Emerson College in Boston shows some interesting trends that probably give Ohio Democrats hope and probably give Ohio Republicans at least a little pause. The top headlines. The two top races are basically tied. In the race for governor, Democrat Amy Acton has a one-point lead over Republican Vivek Ramaswamy, 46% to 45%, which is well within the poll's margin of error, which means those two candidates are tied. The good news for Acton is she has gained a net 11 points on Ramaswamy since the summer. In the race for U.S. Senate, incumbent John Husted has a three-point lead over former Senator Sherrod Brown, 49% to 46%. Again, within the poll's margin of error, that race has not changed a whole lot since August. Lots more to dissect here, and here to help us do that, we welcome the Senior Director of Emerson College Polling, Matt Taglia. Matt, welcome to Snollygoster.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We will dig deeper into the results and how the candidates are doing, but bottom line, what is your big takeaway when you looked at these results?
Yeah, I think the takeaway here is that this is competitive. Both races are competitive, especially for governor right now. There's a pretty significant undecided factor here in the governor's race. 9% are still undecided, but you know, we've seen several groups move toward Acton. Ramaswamy is sort of stuck at this 45% mark. So, I think that these are both very competitive races. I would say that the Senate race is that's going to be a little bit more of an uphill battle. But Brown being a known commodity across the state, you know, he'll have to really campaign hard for it.
Yeah. Yeah, being known commodity has its advantages and disadvantages, of course. Looking first at the governor's race, you know, Amy Acton has picked up 7 points since your poll in August, and Ramaswamy has lost 4 points since the summer. The big change in that time really has been Amy Acton, her potential primary opponent, former Congressman Tim Ryan, decided not to run. Does that explain that increase in 7 points that people say, okay, now I'm with Amy, not now that Tim Ryan is not going to run?
I think that's definitely a factor. You know, as the field clears, you start to see people consolidate around candidates. But, you know, we also see that women have shifted. They're now breaking for Acton. They were split in August. Men still support Ramaswamy by about 20 points. But Acton ends up winning independents by about 5 points. That'll probably prove crucial in the state in this race. So I don't think it's purely the fact that the field has been cleared, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, some folks have made up their mind. And I also think that the electorate is changing in real time. You know, we've seen elections in 2025 really move towards Democrats. And I think we're seeing some evidence of that here as well.
Yeah, interesting. 9% still undecided in this race. It is early. We just mentioned 11 months before Election Day. Is 9% pretty typical for a statewide race for governor at this point?
That's pretty. Yeah, I think that is pretty typical since we do have quite a long ways to go in the campaign. Interestingly, we did find that middle-aged voters are more likely to be undecided in the gubernatorial ballot. We don't typically see that. We usually see younger voters who are more undecided, aren't really sure. But this time it's middle-aged voters. And you know, I don't really know what to chalk that up to, but I think that we are seeing consolidation among some of these youth voters, especially in their 30s towards Democrats. We're not seeing that yet, though, with these middle-aged folks.
Yeah, I think part of the thing is that, I mean, Amy Acton and Vivek Ramaswamy, they're known. I mean, Amy Acton was very well known during COVID. She was basically one of the faces of Ohio's fight against COVID early on. She was on TV every day with Governor DeWine. She, of course, was the health director. And Vivek Ramaswamy, you know, he kind of burst onto the scene, but he did run for president and got a lot of attention there and was on the early for about, I think, for 24 to 48 hours, was a member of President Trump and Elon Musk's Doge team. So he's out there. Could it be the middle-aged voters just want to know more about these candidates?
I think there is some degree of that, yeah. So, you know, as you said, Ramaswamy, he is well-known. 80% or so of the electorate have some opinion of him one way or the other. But his problem is that to know him is not to like him necessarily. So, you know, he's got 40% favorable, 41% unfavorable. And within that unfavorable, there's 36% who say they have a very unfavorable opinion of him. That's not good. So I really think that despite the fact that Ramaswamy is more well known, he's got an uphill battle here as far as trying to convince people that, you know, he's a likable guy, just getting that favorable number up further, convincing people to vote for him. Acton, on the other hand, she is reasonably well known. About 70% of the electorate knows about her, has an opinion of her one way or the other. But there is, you know, that factor where her voters don't necessarily have a strong opinion of her one way or the other yet, voters across the state. So she has a little bit more of a blank slate. I wouldn't say it's entirely blank. Obviously, with her role during COVID, a lot of folks are going to know who she is and have an opinion of her one way or the other. Yeah. But she is the less well-known candidate in this case.
Yeah, I mean, she's known for what she did. She was the health director, and she had the white coat, and her positives were huge back then, especially the early days. The shutdown angered a lot of people, of course. But I think a lot of folks, even us in the media, are waiting to see what kind of politician she's going to be, what kind of a governor. I mean, how does she handle other issues like economic development and education and workforce development? She handled COVID and health really well in the minds of many Ohioans. Is how does she handle the other stuff that comes with being governor? I think that's where the campaign's going to work that out.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, COVID, depending on who you are and your political persuasions, you know, you might have pretty strong feelings about that one way or the other. So if I were Acton, I would not necessarily be relitigating COVID or discussing my role too much there, apart from, you know, the sort of generic leadership qualities, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because hindsight, of course, is 2020 now, and we know that some of the things that we all thought was a given back then didn't turn out to be perhaps the best choices, but we didn't know what we didn't know back then. But trying to explain that during a campaign is going to be difficult. She's going to be labeled as, you know, Lockdown Amy. That's going to be, if it's not already out there, it's going to be. Vivek Ramaswamy, I mean, he's very tied to Donald Trump, and Donald Trump does pretty well in your poll. His approval rating in Ohio is a little bit above where he is in the rest of the country. Do you think that's adding to Ramaswamy's unfavorable rating, that he's closely aligned with Donald Trump?
Well, you know, I I'm not sure that that is having an effect here. We do see that Trump has an approval rating of 46% approve, 48% disapprove. That's not very good in Ohio, frankly. In a state that he won by about 11 points in 2024, you know, that is absolutely not what the president would like to see, or any Republican on the ballot in 2026. They don't want to see that. Mm-hmm. It might be hurting Ramaswamy a little bit. I tend to think, though, that since folks really do know who he is for the most part, they've seen him, as you said, run for president, these other roles. Yes, Trump might be hurting him a little bit, but I do think that he has carved out his own unfavorables here.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. He is a force on the campaign trail, as you know, and he's wonderful on the stump. You may not agree with him, but he speaks without notes. He speaks with passion. Sometimes he gets in trouble because he speaks so much in passion. He has to take things back. But Amy Acton is, you know, more low-key, and it's going to be really quite the contrast as that race develops. Turning to the Senate race, we mentioned that it's basically tied. John Husted has a 3-point lead over Sherrod Brown. And the thing that stuck out to me is 38% are unsure or have never heard of John Husted. John Husted, who has been Speaker of the Ohio House of Representatives, he's been Secretary of State, which is a statewide office, and Lieutenant Governor. And 38% still are unsure or have never heard of him. To me, that's just, that reminds me of Rob Portman. I don't know if you ever polled Rob Portman in this state, but it was the same way. He had been in Congress forever, and a good third to 40% of the Ohio public didn't know who he was.
Yeah, that does happen. You know, sometimes folks just aren't paying that much attention. I think that's, you know, clearly the case here. We do end up with politicians who fly under the radar to some degree. And I do think it's worth pointing out that for Houston, 14% say that they've not heard of him. That's not an alarming number. Mm-hmm. That's actually pretty high name ID. So, you know, certainly not alarming. It is definitely higher, though, than Sherrod Brown's number, that being 2% who have never heard of him. So, you know, again, known commodity in the state.
And we should point out here that you polled registered voters, not likely voters. And among likely voters, that name ID might be a little bit higher, correct?
That's right. And we are going to be moving towards a likely voter universe in 2026 at the start of the new year. So I'm sure that we will pull Ohio again, and that will be likely voters.
Yeah. When you look at that Senate race, it's really, this is good. This is the first election after a new party takes over the White House. It generally goes in favor of the party that is not in the White House. And I would think that there will be a wave of some sort. It depends on how big a wave, and that's what Sherrod Brown's fate will rest on. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. You look at the 2024 race, Brown only lost by about 3.5 points. So we really only need a net shift of 3 or 4 points in Ohio in order to win that Senate seat. So Brown could very well win, and he may not have to do much work in order to do so if the electorate is as fired up as they have been in 2025 for Democrats. So I think it's well within the realm of possibility that Brown wins this seat.
Again, it's early. I have to keep putting that disclaimer on us, and we're speculating. But do you see in this race, based on the polling you see now, a split ticket where, say, Brown wins but Amy Acton loses, or the other way around?
That's a possibility. I tend to think, based on these results, that they would go in the same direction. But you know, if the margins are very close, then split tickets may matter. One party could win one seat, one could win the other. So it's certainly a possibility. But I tend to think if that wave does transpire as it has in 2025, then these seats would both likely go to the same party.
Yeah. And you never know what happens in a campaign. A candidate could, you know, have a major mistake or something like that could sway things as well. A couple other things before we let you go. Mike DeWine's approval rating, 26% approval rating, down 6 points since August. I found that kind of surprising. What do you think's going on there? Is it just because he's in, you know, the final couple years of his term, and he's truly is a lame duck?
You know, I found this surprising too. That is a shockingly bad approval rating for DeWine. So we really did not expect that. It's interesting to see. You know, I think that it's a combination of several factors. You know, obviously, Trump's approval rating is poor for in the context of Ohio. So I do think that that probably is driving DeWine's approval down a bit. I think the issues, if you take a look at the issues, the economy, 44%, threats to democracy, 13%, healthcare, 11%. I think that that does speak to some folks and how they feel in the state and how they feel the state's leadership are handling these issues. And then there's another one that we tested, whether folks trust Republicans or Democrats more.
Yeah, that was
on the issue of affordability, right? And 43% trust Republicans more, 37% Democrats, and then 19% neither. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to me, that it's that neither number and the fact that none of these folks get over 50% there. I don't think that the electorate really trusts Democrats or Republicans to handle issues of affordability and make Ohio more affordable. So, I just think we're seeing the effects of that, and they're taking it out on DeWine.
Yeah, it could be a simple right track, wrong track. Do you think the state's heading in the right direction or the wrong direction? Maybe that's what you're seeing in these numbers with the approval ratings of DeWine being low and Trump being lower than it has been for him and things like that. So,
yeah, I think to some extent, yeah.
One more thing, undocumented immigrants. Majority of Ohioans say mass deportations of undocumented immigrants in Ohio is a good thing. Now, we've had deportations here, certainly, and certainly in the bigger cities, but we have not had the scenes like you've seen in L.A. and Chicago and other cities. What do you make of that number? I was kind of a little bit surprised by that number. When I hear the term mass deportation, I just don't think that's happening here, at least as far as it's not visibly happening here.
Yeah, this is a little surprising. So, if it, you know, 53% say that deportations are a good thing, 47% say that they're a bad thing. But that is a net shift of 8 points since we last pulled this. Hmm. So I found that pretty interesting.
8 points in which direction?
And that's towards a bad thing.
Okay.
So there are more people saying that it's a bad thing now than there were earlier this year. So I do think that that's interesting. I think maybe once folks actually saw pen to paper and deportations happening, some of the media coverage, I think that that's affected them. And I think that, you know, obviously it's split. It's a split issue, almost right in half. But I think we're seeing some folks say, yeah, you know, maybe that's enough.
Yeah, you don't know who's had a coworker or a neighbor or a person at a store or a business that they've dealt with has experienced deportation, or a family member has experienced deportation. It's going to start to come home more and more, especially here in Ohio, where, you know, we look at the Springfield, Ohio, just a little bit to the east of to the west of Columbus here, where you have a lot of Haitian population, and they're all on that temporary protected status, which is going away. So it's going to become more and more of an issue here in Ohio over the next several months. We'll see how that plays out. My thanks to Matt Taglia. He is the senior director of Emerson College Polling. Matt, thanks very much for joining us on Snollygoster.
Thanks so much for having me.
We'll have you on again when your next poll comes out. How's that?
Sounds good.
Thank you, Matt.
All right. Thank you.
We'll be right back.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past week. This week, Governor DeWine was really mad. He called out 15 colleges and universities around Ohio for not meeting state law that education students be experts in the science of reading, that is phonics, before they graduate.
It's just a moral imperative that we get this right, and we get it right damn fast.
Damn fast. Moral imperative. Man, I don't think I've heard DeWine speak like that. Setting aside that this is the issue that has Mike DeWine riled up, not intel or guns or redistricting, but it's science of reading. We took a look at the list of 15 schools who remain out of compliance with the science of reading law. Ohio State is on the list. Ohio University is on the list. Bowling Green University is on the list. They produce a lot of teachers. That aside, also on the list, Defiance College, the private college in Defiance, Ohio. Now, I have no opinion on the science of reading, whether it should be state law or not, whatever. I just love the fact that the school appears to be living up to its name, at least for now, defying the science of reading law. Defiance College, for making Governor DeWine swear, you get our Snollygoster of the Week award. That'll do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. We are now off for the holidays. We're going to take a break, give you a break from politics, I hope. If you love politics, take a break. So unless something extraordinary happens, we will talk to you next on January 8th. We very much appreciate you listening during 2025, and 2026 certainly will be filled with lots of snollygostering on the part of shrewd Ohio politicians, and we will be here to trace it all. For our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.